We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hello, friends. It's Kirk Henderson for another episode of Kirk Your Enthusiasm. I'm rejoined by multi-time guest Ben Collins of NBC News, former child reporter for the Dallas Mavericks. Ben, how are you?
I'm lovely, man. How are you doing?
I'm great. You know, the last time Ben was on the pod was a celebration of the preposterous Luka Game 4 overtime victory, where we only talked for about 10 minutes, but it was essentially... For anyone that didn't hear it, it was 10 minutes of us sort of like shrieking about how right and happy we were. And you know, granted, the Clippers won in six, but it was, you know, really a vindication of a lot. And, you know, we've had kind of a very shortened off season with the weirdness of the world and the NBA needing to get back on track so it doesn't kind of collapse under its own weight. And there's just all sorts of things that are outside of our control, but the NBA is going to press on with the draft happening a week from tonight, because you and I are recording on Veterans Day on 11/11. This will go up on 11/12. The draft will be the 18th, and then free agency starts Friday night at 11/20, you know, right before Thanksgiving. Couldn't be more excited. Woo. You and I, we're going to talk about the draft first. Or not the draft. We're going to talk about free agency first, because that is where things get weird in a hurry. And then I think we'll circle back in the end and talk a little bit of draft. So Ben, in your time on the internet, when you can play with the NBA trade machines and the various options that are out there, what are you thinking? What are the real things that are coming to mind that won't leave your brain about the Mavericks at this point in time?
Okay. So I think the one thing that we've been tied to over and over in the last few months is Victor Oladipo. And I don't know where this is coming from. I don't know what it is. And initially I was repelled by this, because I was like, first of all, I don't want another guy coming off injury. He might, it's just, you know, he's a lot of money. Even if he does great, we have to resign him and retain his cap hold. And that takes us out of the Giannis stuff. But then I heard the price for him is like the 18th pick and DeLon Wright and Dwight Powell. Like, that's what they're saying on the, so I heard it on Sam Vecenie and Danny LaRue talk about that. And I was like, you know what? Maybe that's worth it. Maybe that sort of thing where it's like dead money plus a pick. Sure, why not? That's worth a shot. The guy's athletic. He's a good defender. And at the end of the day, the number one goal for this team, I think we both agree with this, is a second playmaker. We need a guy who can create when the ball has stalled and when Luke is having an off game, when Luke is on the bench, right? That's the most important thing. And I think he can do that every once in a while. So if that's what the price is, I like this Victor Oladipo thing. Would you do that trade? Would you do Dwight, DeLon, and the 18th pick?
See, the only stuff that I've heard about Depot at this point was sort of like Simmons and Russillo and people kind of talking. Yeah. And I, with as much as I appreciate and enjoy those guys for entertainment value, I don't trust their actual NBA takes. Vecini and LaRue are plugged. So that is high key interesting. It's actually not even a part of our trade rumors post that we have up on the site. I'm going to have to go look into that, because getting out from under Dwight Powell's contract is appealing. I love Powell. Powell is going to be like president of the players union at some point.
Yeah.
Great dude, but his strength is his athleticism. And I'm not sure. Have you ever seen anybody that has torn their Achilles tendon? Have you like seen them up close? There's this one former professional basketball player at Summer League who was a Portland blogger. He was like an overseas player, but he had torn his Achilles and had all the proper rehab, did everything possible that he could. His calves were completely different sizes. That sort of thing just like messes with your biomechanics. I don't care how good there's been a few players who are really able to do it. I'm sure Durant will be something, because that man didn't have any muscle to begin with. But Powell is just so, you know, it's just so based on his athleticism. So getting, you know, moving on from him would be very interesting to me in and of itself, kind of removing Depot from the discussion. I sort of have questions about Oladipo, the locker room guy. This is,
yeah,
he's been on his third team and he's not even through two contracts. So at a certain point, I wonder if he has like, you know, I don't think he's like an outright asshole or anything like that, but I just wonder if he's a little bit of a difficult coworker, and that sort of thing doesn't appeal to me. But the talent and the ability to trade for somebody with upside to, you know, even if it's just a one season rental, I don't hate it.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it too, is if this is our Antoine Walker trade or something, we could do a lot worse than this. You know, we do need to find somebody who can fill into that third star role. And if he plays like he played 2 years ago, which was probably all NBA first, second team cusp, then that's it. We have found it. We don't have to do anything else. We're in very good shape. I also worry about that. It's a very bad injury that he had. And he looked weird when he came back. He had he looked like three quarters of himself. And that's just not enough around like what we need to do over the next few years. And also, this is our last pick for a while, right?
Yes.
And, you know, that was my worry too. There are players in this draft that, even if they can't help us next year, I think can clearly help us in the future. And we need, you know, this is our last shot at getting somebody genuinely young. I don't know how old Victor Oladipo is. I'm going to look it up right now. I'm going to guess that he's like 27. So, you know, that's not young. That's prime. He's 28. Yep. So, you know, that is my worry about that, is that forfeiting picks right now, which would be cost controlled, if they're any good, that's amazing to have, going into the Giannis year, where you have Luka, a high end pick, KP, a bunch of really good role players that you can move around, and then maybe Giannis, and then you're all set forever. Like, you don't need anything else. So I like the Oladipo idea. How do you feel about Jrue Holiday? What are your thoughts? I want to hear about this.
So Jrue Holiday is, well, number one, an incredible human being. He and his wife are kind of one of my favorite American stories of the last several years. For anybody that didn't know, his wife is a United States women's national team soccer player, and she had brain surgery while pregnant and survived and had the baby. And like, they're just kind of like a story of resiliency. Holiday as a player is sort of interesting to me, because everyone considers him a good defender, yet all the teams he's been on have been kind of defensively. And I'm not sure if that's because he has kind of an outweighed like too much of that reputation for what he is. I also think he's kind of got a little bit of a banged up injury history, so to speak. And he's going to be 30. He's going to want a new contract. And I don't know how he will age as a player. So I like him for a year. I do not like him for what the Mavericks are going towards. I think that the Mavericks are 3 years away. I think that they should keep trying, but I'm a little concerned with the talk of you know, really doing everything they can right now. Luka's under contract for five-ish more years. you know, not officially, but that's sort of the way these things work. Yeah. And so I just don't see the need to really go all in with a guy like Holiday, who I'm not sure moves the needle in the way that they need it, because Holiday's not going to have the ball very much in the Maverick offense. He's not, I don't know if he's elite at any of the sort of off ball things that they would need. He does help some defensively, because the Mavericks are basically tissue paper on defense, but that's sort of where my brain is with the free agency stuff and trade options for him. I also don't think them. I think the Mavericks would have to give up a lot to get him.
I feel the same way. Lot. I think that, you know, in a vacuum, I really like him as a player and a person. And I think that, like, ideally as a personnel fit, he's great next to Luka and KP. Mm-hmm. I do think we'd be in a bidding war with a bunch of teams drinking dipshit juice over this. And I don't want to be in a bidding war with anybody like that. I think there are relatively desperate teams like the Lakers trying to find like guaranteed starter caliber players who will be really good next year. And, you know, we don't have to get into that sort of fight right now. We're not, you know, throwing away assets for that is not something I want to be a part of. So I like Jrue Holiday. I don't think we have enough to compete with the Lakers and the Clippers and all these other teams who will forfeit, you know, a pick in 2027 or something, which is what people are talking about with the Lakers, for a year or maybe four overpaid years of Jrue Holiday. So In my power rankings, the Oladipo thing is above Holiday now, even though I like Holiday better as a player and an idea, which is great. But my third option, I think, is there's going to be some sort of out of the blue cash saving situation from one of these teams whose owner doesn't want to deal with this. So it could be, to me, in my brain, it's like Zach LaVine is a possibility, that, you know, notoriously cheap ownership who, you know, they're tired of waiting around. We could sell them on some sort of pick in Seth Curry and Maxi Kleber based package around there. That's a possibility there, or like maybe the Kings blow it up and there are a bunch of people over there that could be interesting to me, specifically, obviously, De'Aaron Fox, but I don't see that actually happening.
Sure.
So I think like the number one thing that I would like to do in the power rankings is just be crazy opportunistic for somebody who is trying to shed cash and gives you a second or third tier level star. Isn't that the best possible scenario for us?
Yeah. I think the cash savings part, and there was a 3-4 team trade discussed today with, you know, the Suns and Chris Paul and the Thunder, and the Mavericks got tossed in terms of being a possible place for landing spots for guys just to make room. And that's sort of where I am right now. I've never been very good at free agent creativity. So these sorts of things I live in the realm of the possible, and it's a good thing that I'm not a general manager, because I'd probably stink at it, because you just really have to get into the weeds and start getting weird the way, you know, I make fun of everybody that does this on social media, but it's kind of what ends up happening, where you just kind of start throwing things out. And eventually it's like not that different than fantasy football or whatnot, where somebody goes, I kind of like that idea. And then you move towards the middle where someone, you know, where both teams end up marginally happy, or, you know, it's like playing poker where one team's actually ecstatic and kind of keeping their, you know, cards close to the vest. And these sorts of things with guys like that, I have a harder time with, because, you know, LaVine is one guy, Dallas Basketball's Dalton Trigg and I kind of go back and forth about, because he strikes me as a guy Rick Carlisle would like execute with eye lasers.
Oh my God. Because... he would absolutely murder him, man. But it must be worth it. That's the thing. Yeah.
But he's so,
I really do, he's so, I really do think you would hate him. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's so offensively talented. You have to, and, you know, say, okay, is this something they'd be interested in? But I just can't help but, you know, have this feeling that when you have Luka, and Luka's an MVP caliber player, finding the pieces that fit with him, it should be easier than this. And maybe it will be in future years. Maybe it's just that the free agency class is just so bleh. And then Dallas is, you know, they have these kind of a glut of solid role players, but they're all playing like two spots higher in the hierarchy than they need to be in order to be effective. Like Maxi Kleber is a good example, because he was so good for most of the season, and then he had to play starter level minutes in the bubble and then in the playoffs, and he just isn't good enough. And that sort of stuff is where Dallas started to get exposed. So what you're talking about in terms of a third star, I'm not sure if it's third star. I just think they need better starters. Like we can't have this game where you have eight, you know, 6 to 7 guys that float in and out of the rotation. I watching what Denver did all year, where they basically played the same 5 to 6 guys. Dallas needs to get to that point. I that's just where I am with this, because I think they need some consistency over time.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's, and the other thing is that I'm starting to realize that we do value our players a little bit more than anybody else does, because I was thinking, like, how do we get into the lottery? How do we find a way up? There are players I like in the lottery a lot that I think would fit really well. And then I'm like, okay, so we'll just trade, you know, Dodo, package Dodo with our pick and see what happens. And then I was like, oh, wait, nobody cares about Dodo the way we do. Like, nobody, like, if you look at his stats, like raw numbers, they're not that good. Only we know that he is that good in the offensive glass, that he's really good defensively, that he's probably our best wing defender. He fills a lot of holes for us. But if you were to trade him to, say, like Atlanta for six, like him and 18 for six, Atlanta's just going to laugh at you.
Laugh at you, right.
And that guy's playing like 40 minutes a night in the playoffs. So yeah. We do. We just need better starters. And I like how we value our guys, but realistically, we have a bunch of dudes who are great 6 through 8 players, and we have mm-hmm. 7 of those. Yep. So we need starters. That's what we need.
And Luka elevates those guys, but then you look at kind of the dudes who are on the free agency market, and I won't read some of them to you and unless you're ready, but it's kind of wild, and it gets kind of dark.
Yeah, I was going to, I actually had a list that I had 3 names.
Oh, let's do it.
I just want you to rank the names. Mm. And remember that they're going to cost different amounts of money. Okay, ready? Sure. Chris Dunn, Davis Bertans, Carmelo Anthony. For this team, not generally as players how you like them, just for this team, and presuming that, you know, Bertans would cost probably like $20 million a year, Melo would cost 5, and Dunn would cost 10.
I mean, Davis Bertans would shoot 55% from 3 with the Mavericks, and that alone makes him the top person there. And he's a better shooter than KP. And newsflash, folks, KP is not that good of a shooter. He just looks very good shooting. That's very different. Then I would probably have to say it's a pretty close tie between Dunn and Melo, even though I'm not a Melo guy. The Mavericks don't need guards. I don't want anyone on the roster below 6'4". Like I've had enough of Rick Carlisle and tiny guys, because they just get exposed. And Dunn is kind of a fighter, and I think he's that guy, you know, gives me like Mike James vibes in 2013. You know, he'd be very like solid in a different situation, but I just don't know how much he'd bring to Dallas.
Yeah, same way. I guess really the question I'm trying to ask you is, say Davis Bertans is really available for, you know, 4 years, $20 million a year. This will price you out of Giannis. And, you know, say it's possible. And so maybe you trade up. Maybe you get like Obi Toppin or somebody in the lottery, and you have some money. Do you do it? Do you just, you know, say like, hey, look, you know, if we do this, we have the best shooting front court in like the history of the NBA. Do we just try it? See what happens?
I would, I think that waiting for Giannis is something that I find myself drifting towards, but I drift towards it out of emotion, because I want it to happen, not because I necessarily think it's the best basketball fit, though I think the Mavericks would make it work. Like, talent trumps all. But, you know, between a solid basketball fit and likelihood of outcome, that's where I want them to be. I do think that Dallas will become, during Luka's time in Dallas, it will become a players of a certain ilk. Guys who don't, you know, who don't need the ball a ton are where we start and finish with that. They may look to reduce his load at some point, but those three, that's why a guy like Bertans sort of stands out, even though investing more money in the front court is not something I'm like loving as a concept.
Right. Yeah. Look, I think that I think that you, if you have the opportunity to do something historically weird like this, you could try it. I don't mind the concept. Like, you're going to, I understand you're not going to hold anybody beneath like 110 points from here on out, but it's like a really interesting idea where you have all this space for Luka to operate. You have your two bigs on the perimeter. KP can kind of sort of crash the glass. Then you can live with Dodo being out there that much.
Sure.
And in like worst comes to worst, man, you can find a way to get off Bertans. Like, you can trade that pick in 2 years. Mm-hmm. You can, other teams will want him. The Warriors would want him. All these other teams that are just raw space now, they would want him. So at the end of the day, if we end up with just that, this free agency, and we overpay for that guy, I actually don't care. I think it's a really interesting idea, and it's not sexy. It's not the old Depot Holiday thing. But it might put us in the Western Conference Finals like next year. I think it's possible that could happen.
Sure.
So I don't know. I'm just tossing it back out there. I know I think every Mavs fan has gone through this cycle of like, oh, it could be Bertans. And then they've kind of faded away with the Giannis stuff. But I just want to put it back out there that it's possible that this could happen. Cause I think it's a decent idea.
Well, when you circle back to the 2019-20 playoffs, the fact that the Mavericks settled for the Clippers fairly early on and the way the Western Conference shook out, I think they could have beat any team in the conference in the playoffs with that kind of scrub collection they ended up having at the end of it. If they would have played Denver early on before Denver kind of caught fire, I think they would have beat Denver. And so it's one of these things where the temptation to assemble a team right now and really push forward, despite what I said earlier about Dallas being 3 years away, I see why it's so appealing to people, because, you know, despite what, you know, history tells us when looking back on these seasons, there's not as much inevitability about the NBA season as it feels like. They're in, you know, the best team usually ends up winning, but there's always these chances for guys, for teams to get hot at the right moments and things like this. And the Mavericks are a couple moves away from being a top four team in the West. And if they're a top four team in the West, then I think that's when these sort of like, you know, dice rolls can happen where it's, oh, they might be able to make the finals this year.
I think it's inherently possible that that teams that are older get worse and teams that are younger get better. I think this is just like the way it goes. And the Lakers are going to have to retain a bunch of these free agents who now cost more. I know they're going to go star shopping, but there's no real, like, to me, it doesn't seem as, like, it doesn't seem like they're headed back, in part because they just played a full season in a bubble. And then 2 months later, they have to go back and do it again. And they're one of the older teams in the league. So there's them. The Clippers have a new coach. I have no idea if that team remains the same next year. And they didn't appear to like each other to begin with. The Warriors will be better. But there is still this, like, there isn't the inevitability we've been dealing with over the last 10 years where the team from the East is LeBron James and the team from the West is probably the Warriors or somebody, or the Rockets had a chance at one point. To me, there's a much more wide open field next year, even than this year. Yeah. So if you want to do this, if you want to get weird, this is the year to get weird with it. I think that, you know, if you want to do the Bertans thing, go for it. If you want to try the Oladipo thing, do it. But like, ideally we go into next season with a relatively firmer starting five and nobody like, you know, like Seth Curry or Jalen Brunson or Maxi Kleba playing, you know, 35 minutes. That's my goal for this offseason.
I like it. Do we have any other free agency things that you would like to make the case for?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess I should just ask. No, never mind. I was going to say I should ask the Harden question, but I'm not going to ask it. We don't have the assets, and it would be a pain in the ass, and it would probably ruin the team. So,
no, but I'm really loving the fact that for anybody that's unaware, if you're reading it this morning, and you probably will be by the time you listen to this, but an Athletic article hit about a half hour ago that seems to just, like, James Harden just gets thrown under the bus again. But at this point, it's not being thrown under the bus. You have like 15 high profile teammates that now are basically tired of this man's crap. And yeah. I can't revel in this more. because he looks like an ass. He behaves like an ass. He has an unbelievable set of basketball skills, but then it just, it's so nice to have this kind of quasi villain to dislike, because he's just, if you're on our team, I'd love him to death, 'cause he's such a jerk, but it's great. It's great. But yeah, you know, the Harden thing's too much. Russell Westbrook is somebody that the Mavs would run far away from. I would love to pick the corpse of the Rockets and get PJ Tucker in a Mavs uniform somehow.
But Covington, if that's doable. There are guys on that team that I really like, but they're not named James Harden or Russell Westbrook.
Well, and then past that, there's a number of guys that I have some interest in, but I just don't know if they're realistic. There's Jay Crowder, who was a member of the Mavericks for a brief period of time, and I loathe as a player. And I'm right about his shooting. I'm wrong about him as a player. He'd be a very interesting fit. There's Derek Jones Jr., who is a member of the Miami Heat, who I just don't know if they can afford. He's raw, but is he athletic. And then last, I wonder if Otto Porter Jr. would be available from the Bulls. He's had kind of a injury bug the last several years. But, man, can that guy – I think that guy's a good basketball player. What do you think?
I would love that. He's just spots up in the corner and – rebounds pretty well and does. I like him as a player, and I think the Bulls would love to get off of that money. He doesn't fit in their plans. He's not on their window. I think of those three, definitely Otto is there. But doesn't he have like a player option? Is that?
Or is I think yeah. It would take some finagling. There would be.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily even think he's available, because they're on this list that Josh and I put together. It includes a lot of guys with player options, just because he and I wanted to maybe consider talking about them. The guy that I had thrown out to me in a Slack channel 2 days ago, Action Network's Matt Moore said, the more I think about it, the more I think the Mavericks should just throw it all away and go chase Christian Wood and give him a big contract, because he does, like, he's a better, you know, he insert him into the Dwight Powell role and he owns, which, man, I would love to have him as a player, but I just don't think the Mavericks would be interested in that, just because he's been kind of a, like, it took him a while to grow up as an NBA player and figure out who he was.
Yeah. Obviously he's very good. I'm worried we're priced out of that. In part because of how weak the free agent class is.
Yep.
He's probably like going to be the second or third highest paid free agent this year. Mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. My worry also is that he, like you said, duplicates Dwight's skills. And if Dwight comes back, even kind of fine, we'll probably have to find some space for him, because we have 3 years left of his contract.
Right.
So, you know, between Dwight and Maxey and him, they might overlap a little bit. But I obviously, you know, him in a pick and roll of Luka would look very, very good. And he also provides a little bit of rim protection, where him next to KP makes it so it's very hard to go in the paint against that team, especially with Lucas still hanging around there too, who rebounds really well. So, you know, it would change the identity of the team. It makes it bigger, makes it stronger, and it might clog up spacing a little bit, but I don't know. That's a way of doing it. That's like when people were talking about getting Clint Capela last year.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted Christian Wood, I think. That's what they wanted, was that kind of athlete. So I don't mind it. He's much more switchable than somebody like Capela is on defense. So I'm okay with that generally. I'm just worried I'd rather play a little bit more of KP at the five, and I would rather more stretch bigs out there than Christian Wood.
Well, it's interesting. Since we restarted this podcast, now we have a little bit more time to talk. So Ian Cobb of our website, fellow New Yorker, New York resident up there with you, made a pitch in our Mavs Moneyball Slack about 3 months ago that sort of stuck in my brain, where he said, you know, what if the Mavs treat Kristaps Porzingis like mid to late career Tim Duncan, where they play him about 28 minutes and then surround him with a fleet of forward and center players who can do all the various things you need to do to in the NBA night in, night out, different matchups, different opportunities. And that thing's just sort of stuck in my head. The Mavs will never do it because Luka's their best player, not Porzingis. But it's sort of funny to me, because I think that would be an interesting option if the NBA was actually bigger, because there's just a lot, like, there's some talented you know, 4 or 5 men in the NBA. There's just not necessarily the space for them anymore, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think, I don't know if you want to transition to the draft from here, but that's a guy who fits this role so well. It's almost spooky the way you just talked about it. If there's a way to get up into the lottery and get Obi Toppin, I think that we should do what we can to do it. I think that he's like a split between Boris Diaw, which is like the late stage Tim Duncan thing. He looks really good in the post from there as a passer, and like Kmart as a roller for Luka. So people are scared of him because defensively he's not very good. And they're like, what position does he play? He's not really a 5, but he's not really a 4. And I guess maybe he's a big 3. And that does not matter when you're next to Luka and KP. All of those guys play that same, like, you know, nebulous, just forward position. The things that scare off people about Obi should be really welcoming to the Mavericks, which is exactly what made Luka a good pick. I hope that we move up and get him. There's that Mavs draft account on Twitter. I think everybody should follow it. You know, we're coming to the same conclusions about Obi, where like his weaknesses are so well hidden in a Carlisle offense and even defense. And his offensive abilities, his very like specific offensive abilities off ball, and his passing ability, it's just a perfect fit. I don't know what it takes to get to like 6 or 7, which is where he might end up.
Right.
But it would be worth it to me to do it. I think it's worth calling the Hawks again and be like, hey, do you want to get fleeced again? Let's just do it. Let's roll. I think it's worth the phone call.
Right. I mean, it's going to be very, I think that no one really knows what's going to happen in this draft is what makes it so particularly weird. You and I, 3 years ago, I think we're much more versed in the various, or at least much more opinionated in the various draft people.
Well, it was like, I don't know, it was like we were the only people who had like our glasses on at the time. Everybody else was like drinking some weird Kool-Aid about the things that Luka couldn't do. And they were all wrong. And we just like, it was very apparent to us what was happening. I will never be that right about anything.
Ever. Well, I mean, the other, like, the things about Luka that were a lot more that let's just talk about him for a minute, because I like talking about Luka. Number one, his left hand was a hell of a lot more formed than I think anyone gave him credit for, because he played a fair amount off ball at Real Madrid. The second thing that was unbelievably apparent in that Clipper series is that man is strong. Mm-hmm. And strength plus space plus Luka's stop-start ability results in every NBA defender, with the exception of the ones who are really slow, like his fellow guys from that part of the world, have a very hard time guarding him. And it's funny. And I think, you know, you and I, at least me, when I thought he was going to be like a 15-5-5 rookie, and I would have been ecstatic, you know. Instead, he was 28-7 and then 28-9-9. Like, this is just the way Luka's been is, you're right, we're never going to be that kind of right again, because I still remember that pre-draft video that one that was about kind of the biomechanics of how he plays, and, you know, watching him plant and do all those sorts of things. It was just so obvious to me that if he wasn't going to be a top NBA player, he would at least fill a niche, which would make him very difficult to guard. And that's where it's just been a lot of fun watching him progress. But, you know, these other draft options, the Mavs are at 18 and 31. I'm pretty sure they'll do something with one of the picks that doesn't involve actually using them on a player that they plan to keep. Which pick is going to be the very interesting part. I had a discussion with somebody that, you know, I feel has really strong takes on this sort of thing. I don't want to say who it is, but essentially reminded me that, you know, the further you get away from the top 10 players in the draft, the less like lengthy careers these guys have. You know, at 8, I have something coming out tomorrow with a SB Nation mock draft, and the guys that were picked 18th, you know, historically, there's just not a lot of great players. And that's where, for me, if the Mavericks have the ability to be safe or swing for the fences, I would much rather them swing for the fences. Desmond Bane is somebody who I think that they should pick. I want them to pick Poku. That's where my brain is right now.
Dude, I love Poku. I think, you know, filling him out is not going to be the problem. You can't teach skill to a 7-foot-1 guy, and this guy has an enormous amount of skill. He's so crafty. There's a viral video, if you look it up, of him making this absolutely ridiculous pass when he's like trying to collect the ball in traffic. He kind of flips this thing into the corner. And this guy really does. People joke around about people moving like a guard if you're 7-1. People say KP moves like a guard. Not compared to this. Poku moves like a guard. He really does. He's very quick, very fleet of foot. I think it's worth a shot. He's obviously going to get absolutely manhandled if they try to play him at legitimate center right away. But you don't pick him to do something right away. I think that you bring him in, you get him much stronger, and you let him play with Joy next to Luka. And I think that you have a really good situation. So if they wind up with Poku, I'm a very, very happy guy. I'm pretty sure he'll be off the board by then, because like you get into like this, there's this weird morass between 10 and 18.
Yes.
Of just like a bunch of random wings. And if you like them, great, but I don't think they're all going to be picked from 10 to 18. Somebody's going to want a forward. Somebody's going to want a project. So, I'm assuming one of them will be Poku, but if not, if he's there, let's take him. Let's see what happens.
10 through 18 is like the Pacers Spurs zone, where like only those two teams find guys that become awesome. And yeah, every other team just kind of herp derps along and kind of, messes things up and whatnot. I just, I'm interested to see what happens with one of the picks, because I do believe that they will attempt to use a pick to get off a contract that they don't like, whether it is DeLon Wright or whether it is 1 year of friend of the show, Justin Jackson. I'm really curious to kind of see what happens, because, Mavs fans are throwing those two in all sorts of picks or in all sorts of trade scenarios. Neither team wants those players, guys. Like, right. I don't know how to tell. Like, Justin Jackson might be a bottom 10 NBA player. DeLon Wright, while not horribly overpaid, still makes $9 million a year in a cap environment where things are about to get dicey. So I don't know. That's just kind of what I would love for them to use both picks, because I like building from within. I trust the Mavericks' ability to select good players when they care. It's just, we just have these so many incidences over the last, 25 years of Mavsdom where Donnie Nelson, a top tier, a scout, just apparently doesn't care. And they pick a guy like Justin Anderson, who they're convinced they can teach him to shoot despite the fact that he has a trebuchet for arms. There's understanding how basketball is played now. I think that the skill set that they're looking for these guys is much narrower than it might have been in years past, which might make this easier to an extent. Everything's a gamble and kind of a crapshoot at a certain point, but I just really wish they'd use both. That's just where my head is.
Yeah, I don't mind it. The 31st pick is historically a valuable pick. People generally want to use that pick for whatever guy fell out of the first round, because they don't want to give him guaranteed money, because they're worried about some weird thing about him. But they will gladly give him a second round. They'll gladly pick him in the second round to give him an unguaranteed contract. So that might be a more valuable pick than something than any other second round pick will ever have. So I think this is a good year to either move that or take a real legitimate swing. There are so many weird international players in this draft.
Yeah.
Who may be down there, like the Maladon kid from France, or that Bolmaro kid from I don't even know where he's from, but he's like a wing who plays like Manu Ginobili. So there is a way to stash somebody with that. That's totally okay. I feel like moving up in this draft is probably a good idea. People really don't want to be in this lottery, and there is almost like a groupthink about it, and you can always take advantage of groupthink. That's what we did with Luka. There was this very weird whisper campaign about him, and we were able to pounce on that. There's a whisper campaign about the first 11 picks in this draft get into number 9 or something. And, right. You might be able to, there's really good starter level talent at the top of this draft. Maybe not a superstar, but we need starter level talent. So if we can move up, let's do it. Package picks, add a player. Let's see what we can do.
Well, before I let you get out of here, I got two more questions. So one question, are you ready for the inescapable grind of what's likely to start on December 22nd? Because they're going to fit 72 games into not a lot of months.
I hope that they don't anticipate players to play every game here. This is way too much for these teams that made deep playoff runs. you know, it's going to be a complicated situation. We don't have the COVID stuff sorted out yet. They're talking about putting fans in the arena,
which I think that gets scrapped.
That's got to be scrapped. You know, the positive thing is there should be a light at the end of this tunnel sort of by the end of the season, whether that means fans in the arena or the country opening back up. But it's a real slog, man. Like, if you think about, like, until 2022, LeBron James is going to play basketball like almost every month for the next like 2 years.
Yep.
There are guys who are going to have to take like weeks off at a time, I'm assuming. I think we have to be prepared for that. And we have to be prepared for that to happen to Luka and KP too. Like, that's why we need a second star. There's going to be a long, or second ball handler. There's going to be a long stretch where Luka is just going to need to take a week off. And I think that we should be prepared for that.
That's kind of how I am. We're probably going to put a call out to anyone wanting to kind of contribute with our game coverage, just because it's too hard to do this. When I was, I'm 36 now. When I was 25 or 27 or whatever, I remember 1 year I did 72 recaps between Mavs Moneyball and the two-man game, where I was sometimes, but I had the time and the energy, and I just can't do that anymore. And now, like, the coverage is different because, you know, there's just too many games. I mean, I really wish they would figure out a way to cut down on the games and still get everybody their money. But, you know, scarcity is apparently not a thing for the NBA. Well, the last question I have, because I've been wanting to ask this since last night, I asked you to record last night and you told me you were unavailable. And I think in no small reason, because you were watching the Netflix limited series, The Queen's Gambit. And, and how far into it are you? What do you think?
So I am in that situation where I am not watching the last episode because I don't really want it to end, and I know it might not come back.
It's done, and it should be. It's great. Great
ending. Yeah. That's good to know. I'm enjoying it. I was skeptical at first, but once I appreciated there's like a mild amount of camp in this that does a lot of weightlifting, and I appreciate that. I think it's great. Once you realize that the lady who isn't Linda Cardellini is the mom in the show, there are a lot of people in the show that look like people that you think they are, but they're not who they think they are. Once you realize that people are doing performances and it's very like, you know, it's almost like Broadway at points, you're like, okay, I can get into this thing. It's going to be okay. And it's super, super easy to watch. It has nothing to do with the world at all. Nope. So really helpful at this moment in time. So I really recommend everybody go waste 7 hours of your life and watch.
Yeah. And it's, they somehow take a topic, a girl who has an like unbelievable, like kind of instinctual ability to understand math and strategy to play chess. And they turn it into a really watchable show that is unbelievably well made. I'm not really one to understand film craft, and they make it really, really watchable. Now, the thing that throws me off, and this is really speaks to this guy's ability to act, is the fact that frickin' Dudley from the Harry Potter movies is in this. And is unrecognizable and really good, like a core character. And it's just, I don't know. I nobody cares about my TV takes, but this was just I wanted to ask you about it. Sometimes anybody talk about TV with, it's like my wife.
It's also an unbridled endorsement of taking tranquilizers as a child. <It's> like, <that's, laughs> the first episodes, you're like, what is happening?
Like, I really want to go Google now. Yeah, I really want to go Google now. Did they make children take tranquilizers at orphanages? And maybe they did. I don't know. There's. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the show. This has been Kirk Henderson and Ben Collins of NBC News. While I have you here, I'd really appreciate it if you'd go to, you know, your various podcast subscription service, look for the Mavs Moneyball podcast feed. You know, like, rate, all that stuff. Tell your friends. It really helps us. And as always, we will see you out there soon.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.